away we go. We're off and running on a getaway Friday, March the 27th, 2020. 15 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Now program. Scott Spears along with you for the ride today. And we have got a big day here on WWGH Radio. We will be live on the air through 1 o'clock today. Now, here is the guest list you are going to want to stay tuned for. As many of you know, the epicenter of this whole COVID-19 coronavirus is New York City in specific. And two gentlemen who we know very well, Dick Cavett and Phil Donahue, both live in New York, and they will both be on this morning at one point or another live from New York. We'll have Dick Cavett on from 9:10 until 10 a.m. this morning, and we will have Phil Donahue uninterrupted on from 11:10 until 1 p.m. So you are not going to want to miss that. Those are going to be very pertinent interviews for the time to hear what these two opinionated, interesting men of the talk realm have to say about one of the biggest events, if not the biggest event, in quite some time. Yesterday, many of you know, the U.S. became the nation with the most confirmed cases of coronavirus, 82,404 infected, 1,100 dead at this point, and that number is ever-changing. Now, if you've been listening to the program all week, we have had many community leaders on, Mayor Scott Schertzer, we have had Sheriff Tim Bailey, Tracy Kinsler from the Health Department, and we are so glad today. It's been such a long time since we've had him in, but Marion County Prosecutor Ray Grogan joins us this hour to discuss what's going on in Marion and his reaction to the coronavirus COVID-19. Ray, how are you?
I'm doing well, Scott. Thanks very much for having me.
What do you make of this?
Well, we are certainly in a time the likes of which we've never seen. But I can assure you, and I can assure the listeners who are listening in, that we as a community are doing everything we can to make sure that though the times are different, the criminal justice system and making sure that people who live and work here in Marion are safe, and that we are doing everything that we can to, even in light of the times, continue that effort.
How has this complicated that?
Well, it's complicated it in a number of ways. I made the decision Tuesday of last week, so we're about, I don't know, 12 days ago or so, to have my staff work remotely. So my assistant prosecutors, as well as the majority of the support staff, the administrative staff, they are working from home. And so that really hasn't had too big of an effect. We've been able to get everything done that needs to be done. There's a lot of email. There's a lot of scanning of documents, things of that nature. But I'm at the office every day and just coordinating with them. We meet typically twice a day on Zoom to have a big sort of roundtable meeting about what needs to be covered and to make sure that things are still being taken care of, but so other than that, in terms of our office, it hasn't had too much of an impact. With respect to our other law enforcement communities, the police department and the sheriff's office, you know, we have officers that are going out every day into the community. Both the sheriff's office and the police department are their members are working 12-hour shifts. They are still engaging with members of the public and the community as they have to. Our efforts will be to ensure that we can do whatever we can to support them in that endeavor, because they are clearly at risk, much like the health professionals and others in our community who are dealing with the public pretty regularly.
When it comes to the social distancing, 6 feet apart, not more than 10 people in a room, I think is where we are at this point. Mm-hmm. How does that impact trials, juries? Are those still going on at this point?
That's an excellent question. So we have filed motions to continue a lot of the jury trials. Grand jury is still meeting, although that may come to an end. It come to an end in the sense that there may be a pause of that. That doesn't mean people are not going to be charged with crimes. That doesn't mean any that we're going to be doing any less. It just means that the grand jury would meet less frequently. But ultimately, there was emergency legislation that was passed yesterday, and passed Wednesday. And the governor, mentioned yesterday at his press conference that he intends to sign that legislation today. That legislation did a number of things, one of which was there's a statutory right to speedy trial in Ohio. It told the time for that particular statutory right up through July. But that's only one consideration. So with respect to a jury trial, a criminal defendant enjoys a right to a speedy jury trial by statute. It's codified in the Ohio Revised Code. They also enjoy a speedy right to a speedy trial pursuant to the Ohio Constitution, as well as the federal Constitution. So even though this emergency legislation I believe the governor is going to sign today addresses that, there are still other considerations that have to be taken into account before we could do away with an individual's pause, if for example an individual's right to a speedy trial. I think it's a very complicated issue, and certainly the last thing that we want to do is jeopardize an individual's right to a speedy trial. They have that right, and we need to make sure we are doing what we can to make sure that they receive it. But it does get complicated, because if we have the CDC's recommendation is no more than 10 people in a room, clearly a jury trial between 12 jurors plus one or two alternates, so we're looking between 13, 14 people there, two or three lawyers in the room, the judge, of course, the bailiff, the defendant. You can have a room filled with 20 to 25 people. Plus, trials are open to the public. And so you have people who would enter the courtroom and have the ability to observe. So it can get complicated. Now, I think you could take steps to, maintain social distancing, but the biggest issue for me is, can we do it safely? Can we conduct a jury trial safely without putting people at risk? And one of the considerations that we have to consider also is, when we summon a jury, we typically have between 40 and 50 people in the courtroom to pick the 12 that are going to be the jurors. And so to have that many people in a courtroom, to maintain 6 feet of distance would be difficult. So we'd probably have to bring some jurors in, bring them in 5-10 at a time and do the process that way. So it's there's a lot of questions and a lot of things that we'd have to iron out. But whatever those may be, we'll figure out.
If I was somebody over age 65 and I was called to a jury trial, would this be a reason not to come that would be acceptable?
Well, that would be up to the judge.
Right.
So that would not be my call.
Right.
The question you have posed is the central question that we're contending with in the criminal justice system with respect to jury trials is, even if an individual gets a summons, they are by law obligated to appear, and the expectation would be that they would. The issue becomes, would some people ignore the summons? And and then if brought into court at a later date to explain why it is they didn't show up, and they raise that as the issue, what happens there? Again, that's entirely up to the judge. But I think that's another consideration: is, are people out of fear for their own safety and well-being, perhaps going to say, "Yeah, I'm not going." Legally, are they obligated to if they receive the summons? Yes. Will some people ignore it? Probably. Mm. So
it's interesting, because from day one we have pandemic and we have panic. As near as I can tell, these are the two things that are going on in the community. Now, the pandemic at this point, I believe we're still at 4 in Marion, 4 cases of COVID. I believe they're all still at home. None are in the hospital at this particular point, which is good. It means they're a little minor cases than some others. But how big is this in general in your eyes, being just a resident of the state of Ohio?
I think a couple of things. One, clearly the fact that the World Health Organization has classified COVID-19 or the novel coronavirus as a pandemic, I think is remarkably important. It demonstrates how big it is. For those who perhaps at least initially thought maybe this was overblown or that this wasn't a big deal, I think the fact that the NBA has postponed the rest of its season, the NHL has done that. I mean, we're talking about leagues with hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue that are going to be foregoing that revenue now. I think when you take that, I mean, the Olympics have been postponed, you know, and quite frankly, there's a stay-at-home order now from statewide. This is a big deal. This, from again, I am not a scientist nor a doctor, but from watching Dr. Acton and the governor each day, we're talking about a virus that is twice as contagious as the flu and 20 times more deadly. So this is important, and it's important that we comply with the stay-at-home order and that everybody who is has been deemed non-essential stay home. And so to answer your question, this is a very big thing that we're living through and that we're experiencing. With respect to panic, what I can tell you is that this is not the time for panic. This is a time for resolve. And this is the time for us as a community to come together, to support one another as best we are able, and to really make the best of this situation. You and I were talking before we went on the air, you know, about a number of things. But one of the things that we talked about was how as a community to see so many people coming together from our community to put Marion, it really what I think it does, it puts Marion in a different category. We, you know, having patrons go to places like the House of Hunan and some other local businesses and continue to do takeout. My family and I have done that a number of times, right? Because this is a big deal, and people are going to be affected by this financially. It's going to have a remarkable impact on people. And so the more we can do to support one another and to resolve ourselves to getting through this, to run the gauntlet, as Governor DeWine has talked about, I think we're going to be better for it.
It's interesting. When the stay-at-home order went into effect on Monday night but was announced on Sunday, a lot of legalities came up in this. What does it mean? Can you be pulled over for this? Can you be fined? Could you be prosecuted? What could happen here? And then businesses had the same question. Am I essential? Am I non-essential? And it's no shock. Whirlpool was on the Columbus News. Is it essential? Does it need to be essential? How has it changed the legal system? Because we've never had a stay-at-home order like this.
Well, I think it's, you know, the Department of Health is in charge, and the governor talked a little bit about this yesterday at his press conference. The Department of Health is in charge of deeming, in their order, has deemed who is essential and who is not. And essentially it comes down to Tracy and the local Board of Health to do investigations if we have a business that perhaps is not essential, that is still operating. I think, as the governor mentioned, you could face a misdemeanor citation if you were, you know, out and about and what you're doing is not an essential activity. That's the last thing anybody wants to do. It is absolutely the last thing that, I'm sure the sheriff's office wants to undertake and, quite frankly, the Board of Health wants to undertake. And so, you know, I think thus far, one of the things you and I talked about before we went live on the air was driving down 95 and it's eerie. There's hardly any cars, right? That to me is a very good sign. It's a good sign in the sense that people are complying with the stay-at-home order. They're doing what they have to do to protect themselves, protect their families. And so thus far, knock on wood, we haven't had much of an issue with respect to the stay-at-home order. Our community has come together in ways that have really, quite frankly, should make us all proud. We've not had a tremendous issue thus far that I'm aware of.
Now, we have the stimulus package coming from the federal government, which I think most people think is a good thing at this point.
Sure.
But when financial times get rough, people do things they normally wouldn't do. And
right.
We hope that doesn't happen. But is there any concern about that? Because we don't know the end date of this problem we're having.
Sure. It's always a concern. What I can tell you and tell anybody who may be listening is the sheriff, Sheriff Bailey, Chief Collins, and I get together daily. Yesterday was the first day we did not get together, but we were texting one another. We are still very much engaged with one another to make sure that our agencies are doing all that we can to keep our community safe. So whether, you know, for example, a jury trial goes forward or not as a result of this, or whether, whether that may be the case, what is never going to change is my office's approach to crime, nor the police or the sheriff's office approach to crime. We are still very much engaged. We are still going. It will be business as usual for the law enforcement community. Make no mistake about that. Though things may change in terms of people working from home or the 12-hour rotating shifts for local law enforcement, what will not change is our commitment to doing everything we can to make sure that we are safe. If you you commit a crime, you're still going to be subject to arrest. You are still going to be subject to a prosecution. So we are still very much engaged in that effort, and nothing will deter us. It might change the way we approach it, but nothing will deter us from accomplishing that.
It's interesting. When the sheriff was in here, we talked a little bit about pulling somebody over at this point, going and getting a report. It's a little nerve-wracking, especially when we hear yesterday that possibly by the time this is over, 40 to 70% of Ohioans will have contracted this in some way. Yeah. Is there a concern for the officer who might be walking up and arresting somebody or questioning somebody who might have this?
Absolutely. And you know, the last thing that we want to do is ever is put a law enforcement officer in harm's way, and whether that be from an individual suspect who is perhaps a violent person, something like that, or somebody who has a disease that or a virus, in this case COVID-19, that could cause great harm. But so you may see some variations. So for example, if they pull you over, they may be doing a passenger side approach as opposed to the driver side approach, just in an effort to maintain more distance, for example, I think is something that you'll see. And so, I think what you'll see is law enforcement officers perhaps employing different tactics, if you will, in an effort to keep the officer safe. But in terms of the overall mission and investigating criminal activity and such, that will absolutely remain the same.
Being around the city, the traffic that you see at this point coming in this morning, does it seem about right for a stay-at-home order?
I would think so. I tried to go to McDonald's before I came here to get a cup of coffee, and the line was around the building. So I thought that was a welcomed sign. It was my hope that everybody was going to work or shuttling, kids to the daycare centers and whatnot. That was my hope, that they were going to their what has been deemed essential business jobs. Thus far, though, yeah, I think, like I said, we have not seen a real we haven't seen a problem really with anybody complying with the stay-at-home order. And by all means, as the governor said, you want to go for a walk, or you need to go to your neighbor's house to check on them, or your elderly parents to check on them, or whatever the case may be, or if your children need something from the grocery store, by all means, goodness sakes, go take care of whatever you need to take care of. It's just if you're not doing those things, because quite frankly, those things are essential, right? I have two parents who live in New York, and so if they if they needed something, I'd be over there in a heartbeat. The issue becomes sort of the non-essential things. I have a 10-year-old little boy and a 3-year-old little boy, having friends come over or my 10-year-old going to his friend's house, those things are just out of the question at the moment. But that's okay. We'll get through it, and we'll push through.
How has it changed your life in general?
Well, it's changed a couple of things. My biggest concern with this is I have a 3-year-old little boy who has asthma. And his asthma is pretty serious. He has an inhaler that he uses twice a day. And then he has a separate albuterol inhaler and albuterol apparatus that allow us to give him different treatments. And so it weighs heavily, you know, just because this is a respiratory disease, and his respiratory system struggles at times. And so it's put us on high alert, his mother and I. And my wife, who's listening, and I'm sure won't mind me saying this, but she's a type 1 diabetic. She wears an insulin pump, and, you know, so she has an underlying medical condition which could complicate this should she contract the virus. And so so first and foremost, my family weighing on my mind is, you know, what has been first and foremost. With respect to my work, it's changed, again, as I said, in the sense that we have that a lot of the office is working remotely, but the courts are still operating the very same way. Judge Edwards and Judge Warner, their dockets are full. We're still plugging away. You know, we grand jury to date is still meeting, and so from a practical aspect of my work, it really hasn't changed that much. When what it has done is, as I said, the sheriff and the police chief and I, though we would talk often, we would typically not talk every day, but what this has done is given us the opportunity to get together every day. And, of course, those conversations, which begin every day with respect to, you know, this novel coronavirus, they branch off in other things. And so, dare I say, it's actually been helpful to the lines of communication between my office, the sheriff's office, and the police department. We've been able to have some pretty fantastic conversations, and really has brought us together in an effort to make sure, even in light of this, dare I say, in spite of this, we are going to maintain law and order and do what we have to do to protect the community.
Do you think people in the beginning and up until this day understand the severity of this and what is to come? We're not even at the peak yet.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. You know, I think initially there were many people who were skeptical, who, you know, I heard time and again, well, you know, this is really just a flu. No, it's not. I heard a doctor in an NBC report, I think it was, who said that for those who say this is really like a flu, it's really not. It's more like pneumonia, but it's like pneumonia on steroids. So it is remarmably serious. Given the fact that we have these operations, such as the Olympics, such as you know, the NBA season and such. I mean, we're talking about entities, and we're talking about so much money that they are. That they have on the line. Baseball was opening day was yesterday, and the season has come and gone. But opening day has come and gone. That should speak to just how serious this is, and the fact that the governor has issued a stay at home order. You know, Dr. Acton has been on TV every day discussing the fact that this is twice as contagious as the flu and 20 times more deadly. If anybody thus has not, you know, has not yet really understood just how serious this is, I think this past week really should have, I hope, turned them the other way.
Why do you think there was a tendency to say it's not as bad as it is being made out to be?
That's a great question. I don't know. I think human beings perhaps are skeptical by nature. You know, as somebody who's run for office in both a primary and a general election, people are. In my experience has been people want to know, they want to get all the facts, and they want to know. They want to, you know, lift your hood, kick your tires, and when you're running for office, they want to see, you know, who you are and what you're all about. And I think it's no surprise to me, at least, that people, at least initially, with respect to this coronavirus, you know, it has kind of a funny name, and it originated in China, and people were a bit skeptical as to how, you know, this would affect them, and I can completely understand that. What I think what this past few weeks has demonstrated, though, is just how serious this is. And I think as people have learned more about the facts of this and have really come to understand its seriousness, I think the crowd that says, well, this isn't a big deal has diminished, for sure.
We're talking about the Crest, and again, these are all projections, and I think the people in Columbus would say this as well. The projection is that this will peak late April, maybe early May at this particular point. We don't know that for sure. That's what we're thinking. But it the quickness that this came on,
yeah.
Monday, we're only 2 weeks in.
Right.
It seems like it's been months.
Yeah.
The Monday, the week that this all hit, nobody said coronavirus. It was on no news reports. Nobody was talking about it. And by Friday, you couldn't buy toilet paper.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, has anything happened like that? I've never seen anything like that.
I've never experienced anything like it. The last time that I think we've come to a standstill like this would be, 19 years ago when I was a freshman at Rutgers University when 9/11 occurred. And the world seemed to stop. And the days seemed to go by longer. I was joking to the sheriff actually when we met on Wednesday, and I said, he asked me how my day was going, and I said it's been a long month this week, mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. This came on so fast, and has really. You're a news guy, right? You're a radio guy. You have I can't remember a time other than 9/11 when one particular single issue generated 98% of the news. It is all coronavirus all the time. And I think it's a good thing in that it keeps people informed and everybody's up to date, and particularly in the advent of social media and the internet, people are allowed to, have the ability to get so much information very quickly, which I think is a very good thing. But this is every story every second of the day thus far.
Being in radio, this has fascinated me, because this is really, as I was talking to the sheriff the other day, this is really the first crisis we have had in this country that impacted the whole country in the social media age. Even 9/11 came before social media.
Right. Sure.
So that being said, if we would come on the radio, if the television, if a newspaper would blatantly put a false story in, we could be sued for libel.
Sure.
Internet can't. And right. There are false stories being put out left, right, and sideways. And the sheriff talked about how they've gotten call after call after call about things that were not true,
yeah.
That came from social media, because 60% of people get their news from Facebook. What impact has that had on this whole thing?
Well, I think, I think, and the sheriff hit on it probably perfectly when he said that, you have a story that is inaccurate, for example, and or in some cases just a flat out lie, but yet you have an individual who perhaps sees it or believes it, or perhaps is just genuinely curious whether the story is true or not, and so they call the sheriff's office, a trusted entity, a trusted agency that they know they can, isn't going to give them any false information, and so. I think it speaks to the level of perhaps misinformation out there. But in addition to that, how people really want to know what is really going on. And so, though I'm sure it's frustrating, and I'm not the one that has to answer the calls, while other emergent situations are trying to come through, nevertheless, I think there's a real yearning for people to have the most up-to-date and best information, and that, I think, probably speaks to that.
Having run for office and being in the public, are you surprised by the amount of false news that is put out vis-a-vis the internet?
It is pretty remarkable. It really is. I guess more so on the national level, really, than anything. There's a lot of stuff out there on Facebook, for example. I'm relatively new to Twitter. I think I signed up this week, but there's a lot of stuff on there that quite frankly just isn't true. So I would caution people to look and to check and to verify. I think Facebook recently just did something. I've seen where perhaps an individual shares a story, and then on the story itself, there's like a Facebook link or something, and that says that tries to warn the reader, no, this is, this has been disproven or whatever the case may be. So I think Facebook itself, as sort of a self-governing tool, has tried to stop that to some degree, but it's always going to be, people are always just going to say things that aren't true, which is why it's important to listen to the experts, right? And why it's important to listen to people like Dr. Acton, who goes on TV every day at 2 o'clock. I don't know if you've seen the wine, 2 p.m. wine with DeWine memes that have been out there, but it is nice, and I watch them if I'm not in court, right? To have the ability to, quite frankly, watch the governor and the director of health live every day at 2 o'clock, to watch the president every day at 5 o'clock with Dr. Fauci, is comforting, and I rather enjoy them because you get really good information from Dr. Acton and who is a medical doctor, and I think she has a master's degree in public health, and quite frankly, she's brilliant, and she knows what she's talking about. And she's not a politician. So maybe you can trust what she says more than others.
Well, it's a funny thing, because we were talking about this before we went on the air. You know, we're in the midst of a presidential campaign. We're in the midst of local elections. It is an election year.
Yep.
Big election year. Everything has stopped.
Yeah.
Everything has come to an absolute halt. There is no news except this. I don't even know if 9/11 did that.
Yeah, it's interesting. The Tuesday, September 11th, 2001, was actually a primary day in New York City. So the primary was, much like we're doing here in Ohio, was pushed out. I don't know how long. So there was a little bit of precedent, I suppose, for that. But you're right. Even in light of that, there was still, campaigning. But for now, the stay-at-home order, it being in place doesn't really allow for someone to go knocking door to door, right? Mm-hmm. But you're right. Even in terms of the presidential election, it has. This has really kind of put a stop on everything.
A lot of people have concern because we have not peaked yet. Do we have the resources in Marion to deal with this if it gets bad? That it's a guess, I guess, on everybody's part, but that's a big question. That's a big fear that people have.
Sure.
Yeah.
We do. Talking with Tracy, the director of health here at Marion. So Marion has a local board of health. We have a local health district that is countywide. We used to have a separate county health department and city health department. They merged some years ago, and so now there is a one central health district. But we have capabilities here. We have a Marion General Hospital, and we have facilities 45 miles on the road in Columbus, which are world class. By the way, along the way, we have facilities in Delaware and in Dublin and other places where if somebody needed treatment, I have no doubt they would be able to get it. So I believe that we have the ability to handle this crisis, particularly in light of the fact that what I'm seeing when I drive around, and what you're seeing when you drive around, which we talked about before we went on the air, which is people complying with the stay-at-home order, right? If we flatten the curve, as Dr. Acton and Governor DeWine have talked about for a couple of weeks now, we will absolutely get through this. We will absolutely get through it.
What impact long term? Because at least until April the 6th at this point, mm-hmm. and, it seems, I don't know for sure, but it seems like it might even going to be longer than that. What impact is this going to have on the small business, on business in general, on the economy, the local economy? It's a whole different world.
It is, and I'm not an economist.
Right.
The information that I have would be purely anecdotal. What I can tell you is, for example, very good friend of mine owns a shop here in town. The number of customers has dwindled to, and which is why it's very, very important that, that we do all that we can to support our local businesses. You know, Marion really is on an upswing. We have I was at an event several weeks ago at the new Brickyard on Main, just an incredible facility, and we have, you know, Marion Brewing Company and High Street Brewing coming in, at least tentatively here within the next several months, you know, Topped and everything that we have going on downtown, you know, we have many, many things that are going on in Marion that are fantastic, many businesses that are starting, and it's an exciting time in Marion. The last thing I want to see is this event, as it continues to go on, to hinder the growth of those businesses. Is it a fear? Of course, but which is why it's all the more important once we get through this to support the local businesses. And quite frankly, even through it, you can still order carry out. You can still, you know, pick up, you know, food that you order carry out at local places, and it's vitally important that we do that.
I think everybody wants to play a part somehow in making this better, easier. We're not doctors,
sure,
but we try our best to do what we can in this weird time. As the county prosecutor, as being a resident, what do you see your position as in this time to make it just make things easier and better?
Well, as county prosecutor, I took an oath when I took office, and I take that oath very seriously, and I will do everything in my power to make sure that, even in light of this current situation we find ourselves in, that I am doing all that I can to protect our community. You know, people are still being charged with crimes. I'm still working daily with the sheriff's office, with the police department, the post. We had a case a couple of days ago. An individual was charged with a felony that the Ohio State Highway Patrol investigated. So we are doing that. That is my number one job. Clearly, is to do all that I can to keep us safe. Aside from that, you know, Ray Grogan, who lives on Gooding Road with his wife and children, is going to do what I can to order carry out as often as we can to support the local eateries, shop at local stores, and do for groceries, including toilet paper, which, by the way, I think we're fine. I think everybody, if you're listening to it and want to take any piece of advice, I think we can ease up on the toilet paper. I don't think we need 100 rolls per person in the house. I think one package should probably do. And until the next time you go to the grocery store, but that's ultimately the number one goal that I have, is to do what I can to support our local businesses, do everything I can to protect us.
Why do you? I mean, the toilet paper thing was odd.
Yeah.
It still is there.
Yeah,
it still is there. Not why toilet paper, but why did that happen? Is that just human nature?
I think to some degree. I mean, I'm completely speculating here at this point. But as I said before, this is not the time for panic. This is the time for resolve. It is a time for us to come together and to look out for one another as best we are able, and quite frankly, stay home. And it's sort of counterintuitive, right? Like, the way that you fight this is by, quite frankly, staying inside your home, unless you absolutely have to be out. And it is a bit counterintuitive when you hear that, you know, you want to fight something. It's a word of action, right? You want to go do something. But I think, given the current circumstances, the best thing to do, the best way to fight this virus is quite frankly to stay home and to make sure your family is taken care of, and whether they live with you or whether it be a relative or somebody or neighbor who lives somewhere else, to do what you can to take care of them as well. And if we do that, and I have no reason to doubt that we will get through this. We're going to run the gauntlet. Times are going to be bad, but we will get through it.
Where do you think this is going to sit in history? Just what we know now and where we think we're going with this. When we look back on this 20 years from now, where is this going to be?
You know, my wife and I were having a conversation the other day about, you know, what do we tell the grandkids, you know, years from now. What I hope that we can tell them is that this was a time of incredible uncertainty, that this was a time that we didn't know what the next day was going to hold. But we came together. People stayed home. Those who worked in essential services and essential businesses did that. But that we came together and we beat this thing. And I have no reason to doubt that we're going to do that. And so when my grandkids asked me, you know, did you stay home? And I can tell them, no, I went to work. I did what I had to do. But even in light of this, I upheld my oath and I did what I told the voters I was going to do. And I think that is hopefully the perspective that we're able to give this to the next generations to come.
It's very interesting to me because somebody who deals with crime, obviously, a county prosecutor, drugs, we talk about it all the time.
Sure.
And of course, we don't like any kind of crime. We don't want murder. We don't want mayhem. We don't want any of that. But illness is different. It's strange. You don't know. You don't know if the person next to you has it. You don't know when somebody coughs if it's the flu or if it's this thing that could possibly kill you in the end.
Yeah.
That is incredible uncertainty.
Yeah, I was actually at Kroger a couple of nights ago, and I was just had to pick up a couple of things. And so I'm waiting in line, and there was a lady two or three people behind me, and she sneezed. And everybody turned around and looked at her, and she put her hands up and she says, I have allergies. That's all it is. I promise. It's allergies. I don't have a fever. It has really put people on edge. But as I said, this is not the time to panic. We are going to get through it. And you know, as long as we maintain the 6 feet social distancing and everybody in line was, those things will help. But I understand the angst. I do. You know, and so I would just encourage people to handle that as best they are able by maintaining the social distance. And I would tell people, though they can't see us at the moment, you and I are 6 feet, if not more, apart from one another. We did not shake hands.
No.
Ordinarily, when we see each other, we would.
Right.
So that's the day I'm looking forward to, the day that this is over, that whether we have a vaccine or whether this thing has run its course and it's done, but that I get to come in and see my friend Scott Spears and shake his hand, and that we get back to that. That's what I'm looking forward to.
After 9/11, I think we became more patriotic. I think that was an affect of 9/11.
No degree.
What do you think the long-term affect of this will be? Is it going to change society in any way?
It's interesting. Though this virus has required of us to keep our distance from one another, I hope it gives us some perspective on how we never take a handshake for granted anymore. We never take a hug for granted anymore. And that at the end of this, that we're able to appreciate those little things even more. That's my biggest hope, that we come out of this a more united community, that and not just united in that we are that we have beaten this virus, but also that we are more united in that, you know, we hug each other and shake each other's hands a little more often.
You talked about the governor's press conferences and the president's press conferences, and that's national and that's state, and we all watch them, and I agree with you 100%. You know, we need to watch those. We need to know what's going on. But for people in Marion who we're speaking to on a local media outlet here, and I've asked this of everybody who was on, what would you say to people who are scared at home right now, maybe just a little touch of anxiety? As a community leader, what would you say to them to make them feel better?
First and foremost, we're going to beat this. We are going to come out of this. We have to run a gauntlet, as the governor said, but we are going to come out of this. We are in this together. Nobody is alone. Even if you're at home alone, you are not alone. What I would encourage those people to do, it's funny, a friend of mine from law school that I hadn't spoken to in a couple of years, he's on a stay-at-home order in the state of Illinois. He lives just outside of Chicago. So he called me yesterday, and we had a conversation for about 45 minutes. And it was great because we hadn't spoken in quite some time. I would encourage them to do that. You know, if they need something and they are unable to get out, you know, to try to call a neighbor, try to call somebody, heck, even call the prosecutor's office. I mean, if we can help in any way, we want to do that. The number is 740-223-4290. And I mean it. If you need help with something and there's some way that we can get through this together, we want to do that. I want to help. And so that's what I would say to them, that it's going to be okay. That this isn't the time for panic. This is the time for us to come together, and we're going to do that.
Ray, it's been great to have you in. It's been far too long, and yes. I'm sure we'll see each other very soon again.
Thank you very much for having me, Scott.
County Prosecutor Ray Grogan, Dick Cavett, and Phil Donahue coming up as the morning progresses.
What do we have in store for your big acceptance speech Thursday night?
Well, before I get to that, I have to talk about your terrible, terrible, terrible Governor John Kasich. I think what he's doing is terrible. Did I mention it's terrible? Because I think it's terrible. He's not endorsing me, which I think is crazy. He's really not helping at all. He's not